Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Would everyone put, we have this wonderful setup for this morning is because this evening there'll be a dinner here honoring our own Murdy Davis, who is being honored by the Samaritan Inn. And so it's set up for the banquet for her, but we're going to have a small banquet this morning with our class. So if everyone could please sit as close to the front as possible, and let's have everybody together at tables, because we're going to be doing some discussion among us during the class after we see Bishop Curry. Did anyone sit at the right-hand side of the church and leave their cell phone this morning for the service? We need to have people. If you all could sit over here, this would be wonderful. We want people to be together in groups. We don't want any people sitting all by themselves, or you'll have to talk to yourself. Okay. My name is Jocelyn Connors, and this is Stephanie Lovett. And each one of you have some members of the Faith and Justice Committee sitting with you, and they'll kind of be the facilitators of the conversations. And Stephanie's going to begin by showing the I'm introducing Stephanie to you.
Oh, okay. Good morning, everybody. The Faith and Justice Committee is really excited to be able to bring this 4-Sunday program to you. What we've done is kind of repackaged for St. Paul's something that comes to us from Trinity Wall Street. We're calling it Encountering Others, Looking for Christian Values Through Story, because it helps us tie in some of other things that have happened with the Rector's Forum, and also because that's what we wound up taking away from the Trinity materials. Just to give you just a brief background, Trinity Wall Street, had to share a picture of it, right? It's so beautiful. And its 300-year history has been, of course, a very influential church. And one thing they've done in recent years is have Trinity Institute every winter. It's a terrific weekend-long program where they bring together invited speakers who are very prominent around a particular topic and really delve and then break out into discussion. And every year we've been like on the edge of our metaphorical seats looking for the theme. What are they going to do next year? So this year in February, the theme was values in action. And we were like, well, that's not quite as dramatic as water justice, which is what they had done the year before, which was a real eye-opener. But as we came together and watched it in February, we became just really excited about this as a topic for St. Paul's, because although values in action is so abstract to you're not quite sure what they mean by it, what it turned out they meant when we watched the program was that maybe we ordinarily think of values as something we have, like a William Bennett-driven checklist of, oh, I believe in fairness and justice, and you know, we've probably all of us, and you know, a lot of us are on boards and committees and things where you like set your organization's values and you make a value statement and you think about values as something you choose to have that then you do something about. But as we watch these speakers, one thing that really dawned on us from Bishop Curry's sermon forward was things happen to you that shape your values. And values aren't necessarily something you have and then you do something about. You live your life and you learn what your values are, and then they inform your future action in more of a loop. And we thought, wow, that was really helpful. It was a different way of thinking about values than you know, I had experience sitting around at committee meetings trying to determine our organizational values and that kind of thing that I bet each of you has had to do at some dreadful meeting. So, so as we watched these talks, that's what came to the surface and that we thought was valuable for St. Paul's was to reframe values in action and connect it to what you'd already heard in the Rector's Forum, that Christian values come forward through story. So we have four Sundays focused around story in different ways. The opening event of the whole Trinity Institute was Bishop Curry's sermon at an actual service. So, of course, we were very excited as North Carolinians about that. So Bishop Curry talked about Jesus' story of being fishers for men, and he had a very exciting 26-minute sermon that we thought took too much of our Christian ed time. So what we're going to do today is show you the second 12 or 15 minutes of it, and that will really set us up for being able to have some conversation in the remaining 20 minutes or so that we'll have in this morning. So each of our four Sundays will be like that. We'll be sharing with you highlights of some presentation from Trinity Institute that's around a more focused subtopic of what they're talking about so we can really get something out of it and then have some questions that'll let us talk more specifically about our stories. I'm a big picture person. I like to know what's going on. So that's what we're aiming to do today. So I will do magic over here and, there we go, and bring up for us what Bishop Curry has to say, and we will be getting him right in the middle of being his wonderful self and see the second portion of this sermon. So here's what we have for you from our wonderful bishop.
God really likes people. I'm not making that up. It's all over the Bible. And God is an equal opportunity lover. Y'all with me on that one? See, God does not discriminate. And if you look at the Bible carefully, it is so clear that this God who we find in the scripture, this God is a relational God. This God is in creating networks of human relationships that have consequences for individual lives and social orders. You remember back in Genesis, in the creation of the world. Genesis chapter 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Y'all remember that story? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was brooding over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be something beside me. Let there be light. And there was light. The old slave preachers heard that story and picked up the rhythm of the poetry from the Hebrew poet. And one of them, as James Weldon Johnson recreated it, said, and God stepped out on space and said, I'm lonely. I think I'll make me a world. Oh, no, this God of ours is a God into relationships. This is a God seeking to create a beloved community. The creation exists as part of God's. Y'all with me so far? But if you look through the rest of the Hebrew scriptures and then move up toward Jesus, you'll see this pattern continues. I'm coming to the values in a second, don't worry. that all of the values and the teachings that you find in the scriptures and that seem to culminate in Jesus of Nazareth, they have their origin and their depth in this reality that God is determined to create a beloved community of his human family and his creation. If you don't believe me, ask old Pharaoh. He found out the hard way. Remember Moses? Yeah, please tell me y'all know Moses. Wait a minute. And Moses, remember the brother, you know, remember Mount Sinai and the Hebrews were slaves in Egypt? And remember he was kind of running away from his past. He didn't kind of want to go back to Egypt. And remember on Mount Sinai he saw this bush that was blazing and that it was a fire, but it was not consumed. And he went up toward the bush. And from the bush, whether it was within him or around him, I don't know how it happens, but he heard a voice, Moses, Moses. Take off the shoes from your feet, for the ground on which you are standing is holy ground. Who are you, Lord? I am the God of Abraham. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the God of Abraham, Sarah, and good old Hagar. Notice that this God does not present himself as a philosophical or metaphysical complication for us to figure out. He said, I'm your mama's God. I'm your daddy's God. I'm your people's God. This is a relational God. And when Moses is finally sent off to Pharaoh, notice what the old slaves again said, go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land, and tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. The notion of freedom, the conviction that all people have been made to live free, is founded in the fact that God has made us free. That God has decreed that we are his children. And if we are his children, and equal before God, let there be no law to decree otherwise. Oh, my sisters and brothers, we're on to something now. Now, I'm going to bring this home in a second. When you fast forward to Jesus, that's what you see. Jesus is passionately, I am convinced that building on the Hebrew tradition, Jesus is passionately committed to helping us figure out how do we live in a loving relationship with the God who created us and with each other as children of that one God. And when he says, follow me, I will make you fish for people. I'm not going to have you fish for new ideas. I'm not going to have you fish for the latest trend. I'm not going to have you fish for complex formulas and syllogisms. Follow me, and I'm going to have you fish for people. I'm going to show you how to build and make a community of people of all stripes and types, all kinds of follow me, and I'm going to show you the way to a beloved community. And this is what it looks like. Blessed are the poor and the poor in spirit. Blessed are the merciful, the compassionate. Blessed are those who passionately hunger and thirst that God's righteous justice might prevail in all the world. Blessed are you when you work and seek for peace on this earth. Blessed are you when you are persecuted. Just because you tried to love somebody. Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do you see it? It's all pointing the way to the beloved community of God, where there's plenty good room for all God's children. He came to show us the way to live as God's family. And that is a game changer.
I found that out when I was getting ready to go off to college. And my daddy, we were in car going somewhere, and I guess he decided this was a moment to have a father-son conversation. And I remember him getting very serious, got the deep resonance in his voice. And he said, you know, I want you to remember one thing when you go off to school. Now, I was probably rolling my eyes, but I still remember it. I want you to remember one thing when you go off to school. You treat every girl the way you want somebody else to treat your sister. You treat every boy the way you want somebody else to treat your brother. Treat every girl the way you want somebody else to treat your own sister. And I remember when he said that, and I remember thinking, man, you have just killed 4 years. I had plans. You had just ruined my education. I mean, you just ruined it.
But I knew what he was talking about because he used to say it to us all while we were growing up as kids. And it's just in me. You know, treat every girl the way you want somebody else to treat your sister, because that girl, no matter who she is your sister. Treat every boy the way you want somebody else to treat your brother, because that boy, no matter who he is your brother. Treat every woman like your mother, every man like your father, and then build a society predicated on the fact that we are brothers and sisters, one of another, and let that be enshrined in the laws of this land. Let that be enshrined. Oh, we're talking about a transformative possibility that is the womb out of which all values in the Christian tradition have their origin. There's a parable. I see Professor Deidre Good sitting out there, so I hope, New Testament professor, I won't mess this one up. But it's y'all know it, it's in Matthew 25. It's the parable of the sheep and goats, the parable of Judgment Day. And when you see judgment in the Bible, that's about justice, which is about God's vision of how the world ought to be. That's what's going on. And in this parable of Justice Day, all the nations, now remember it's a parable, all the nations of the earth, the parable says, Jesus says, are gathered before the king on judgment day for the great moment of judgment. And they're gathered, and those who have cared for him, and he says, those who have shown love to him and tended needs to him, he said, they get to go off to heaven. And I have a vision of this parable unfolding of all the folk who get to go to heaven. They are just as happy. You know that song, when we all get to heaven, what a day of rejoicing that will be. They are just so happy as they, oh, they're just so excited to get ready to go off to heaven. And he said, yeah, I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. And they just kept going on. They said, we're going to go to heaven. And then somebody stops. Now, I'm reading between the lines. Jesus didn't actually say it this way, but this is what he meant. Somebody stops and says, Lord, wait a minute, I don't remember actually seeing you hungry. When did I see you hungry and feed you, or naked and clothe you, or alone and visit you, or in prison and try to set you free? When did I don't remember any of that. And then look at the parable carefully in the New Revised Standard Version. Jesus said, whenever you do it to the least of these who are members of my family, the human family, when you have cared for each other, when you have shown love for each other, when you have shown compassion for each other, when you have labored for justice for each other, when you have done it for them, because they're in my family, you have done it to me. Come on and go to heaven. Oh, I don't know about you, but I want to go to heaven. Put those values in action, because the truth is, we were made by God, for God, and for each other. We are God's human family. We may be dysfunctional, but we're God's family. And in that truth may be our hope. Well, with this I will sit down. Some years ago, I was at home during the summer and was listening to the radio on Sunday, and an interviewer was interviewing a man named Norman Gershom, who had recently published a photographic essay. And it was a photographic essay of Muslims from Albania. And that kind of got my attention, and so I ended up listening to the program, and it turned out that Gershom had published this essay based on the story of Muslims in Albania from the Second World War. As you may remember, the Second World War, a darkness descended the land. A darkness descended the earth, where the exact opposite of beloved community could well have been the order of the day. That darkness descended in Europe, and nation after nation fell as goose-stepping Nazis, decreeing superiority of any race over any other race,
killed and exterminated. Poland fell. Czechoslovakia, Austria, the lowlands, France, and England stood alone. As Nazi armies moved closer to the little country of Albania, orders were sent to the Albanian Foreign Ministry that they were to turn over the names of all Jews living in Albania and their addresses. The foreign minister of Albania was a member of the Muslim community there, and he quietly refused. And like Harriet Tubman of long ago, organized an underground movement. And he sent word to the small Muslim community in Albania that said this, and I quote, "The Jewish people are to live in your homes. You are to hide them in your basements. You are to eat with them at your tables. You are to live with them in your homes. You must treat them as members of your own family." In the Muslim community of Albania, y'all hear me now? The Muslim community of Albania saved 2,000 Jews from the gas chambers. My brothers and sisters, Jesus has shown us the way to love our God, to love each other, and to become his beloved community. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. God love you. God bless you. And may God hold us all in those almighty hands of love.
Our bishop. I know. I guess it's okay that we have to share him with the rest of the country. Have I got my PowerPoint back yet? There we go. We found that to be an awful lot. Going to do that? How is everybody I run into my family? How, you know, I've always remembered John Shields talking years ago about being stuck there on Kirkley's and not being able to turn onto Silas Creek Parkway and the things he had to say to the cars that were in his way, and then having to stop and realize that he'd never speak to those people like that if he weren't in his car. What was going on with that? And I think about that practically every, that was like probably 15 years ago. Probably every time I get in my car, I think about that. And how I can't treat everybody that I'm on the road with as my brother. And I can't treat the guy at Harris Teeter as my dad. And how many people we run into every day that we have to interact with. And how can we be there for them, with them, as human beings? So, which was what Bishop Curry and Christ were asking of us. So we thought that was an awful lot to have to think about. So we thought, well, we'll ask you all to think about it. So we've got some questions organized here just so folks will be able to maybe follow a train of thought that might, you know, might get us somewhere. So starting with, and also that it would be story-based, obviously, that an anecdote might get us a lot farther than just being able to say, oh, I think the reason that I behave this way towards people I hear about in the news and make judgments about them is this. Well, maybe start with the story first and then the why. So what are some stories, what are some anecdotes that come to mind when you think about how we, you know, what we did with a coworker last week, or how we reacted to a news story and the kind of judgments we pass on people that we don't actually know? What's going on with that? Why do we do that when you stop and think? And then the second section asks us to go, well, how about our family? What happens around the Thanksgiving table? What happens when your kid calls you up and tells you something's happened to the car or whatever, large and small? How do we treat our family members differently? You know, what do we expect of them? What are our obligations toward them? And why is that? And then at the end, maybe we can bring those two things together and think about what from that second section we can take back to the first section. Why do we treat our family members this way? How do we feel about our obligations toward them? Is there something there we can maybe move back to our interaction with the larger world? And when we see a story about a guy in the news, we can go, oh, that guy's not only somebody's brother, he's our brother. And if it were my brother in this news story, maybe I would feel differently about it. So maybe trying to focus more. I mean, here I am getting all theory because I am theory girl. But trying to keep it more maybe at the anecdotal level, because I think that might help us more to be present to it. You know, talk our way through that process a little bit. We got about 15 to 20 minutes. If we have time, we can report out. But I think it might be more valuable to just stay in our conversation. So we'll just keep an eye on the clock and see what happens. Thanks. The bells are about to toll, so I think we'll skip the reporting out because the conversation sounds so good. You guys don't have to leap up. I got to go usher. Gordon McBride's going to be upset with me if I don't. But we will look forward to seeing you guys next Sunday. I think Michelle Alexander, the noted author, will be our focus. See you then.